We are about to start our hearing on human resource development in the tourism sector. And the first briefing will be a presentation by Department of Tourism Human Resource Development Strategy. Maximum time will be 40 minutes. The second presentation will be presentation by Theta on Skills Development Strategy for 40 minutes. That is the maximum amount of time. Three remarks will be questions and answers with a maximum of 70 minutes. And then we'll be dealing with our committee program for the second term 2010. And then we shall close this meeting. Hello, Chivas.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm afraid that the flag in front of us is not representing us. The flag there. That is not a South African flag.
Okay. No, we cannot afford to have flags that are not ours as a country. I don't think we wish to be South African, at least not in Parliament. And we can be careless, but we should not be careless about symbolism, because it means something else. And the person that is responsible for preparing rooms, they've got to make sure that the rooms are in a position that is distinct. Our allegiance is to that flag with black, gold and green, which then aligns all the colors, red, white, green, towards a beautiful eternity. They flow in parallel without any conflict. That is our beautiful flag. Something else is not ours, and then we do not need it here. We won't see it in America, you won't see it in England, you won't see it in Angola. So let us make sure that it is for the last time that we have this type of situation. We are careless about our changes, and if we are very careless, they are going to be reversed. Let us then start with a presentation by the Department of Tourism Human Resources Development. And perhaps here we are looking at the strategy and areas of development where it is going to be developed. We are looking at its priorities and then comparing it with the priorities of government and looking at affirming the historically disadvantaged people. We are looking at sustainable livelihoods, inclusive growth and partnerships in the process of maintaining growth, and mentorship programs, and given that the department now is independent, what does that mean in terms of resources, capacities, in terms of human resource in the department? What are the outcomes that we are looking for? FETs, universities of technology and the private sector, relations and partnerships with the department and other role players, rural development and new projects. Where are we training in order to realize this? Is this going to happen this year? Are we looking at next year? What exactly are we looking at? And then preparing for 2010 and its legacy. 2010 is going to result hopefully, increased numbers of tourism, in increased enterprises. If we do not plan for human resource legacy, we may have a problem. And we may end up having people that are not South Africans being employed in the restaurants, as we see at the airport in Cape Town, where most of the people that are waiters are not South African. We do not know whether they have work permits or not, but we were elected to have South Africans first, then we can look after other people. That was the mandate. Those are the people that voted for us. People who have voted for us should be first in when it comes to wealth, when it comes to employment, when it comes to sustainable livelihoods, and preparing for growth going forward. These are the things that we are looking at, and I'm sure that each and every one of us received this thing, this presentation from the Department of Tourism. This presentation, it has got some of the aspects, but perhaps when the presentation is made, some of the things that we pronounced may be mentioned. So without much ado, we welcome the, is it going to be the acting TG? Okay. Thank you, sir. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. I think we're honored to be back in Parliament. The presentation will be done by Bulewa. Just to state that what we've done with the presentation is to also get the link into the draft national tourism strategy that has been presented to the portfolio committee earlier, for you to sort of see the links between that, as well as our strategic document of the department. So at the end, the link between the human resource development strategy and the implementation, how that links into the E&E document, and that links into our sort of strategy that we presented to Parliament for the next 5 years. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and then I'll hand over to Bulewa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, I will quickly present on the Tourism Human Resource Development Strategy. Honourable members will actually note that this slide is not actually captured in the presentation forwarded to you, but we felt that it would be important for us to begin to formulate a base for our discussion. As we all know that we have a document called the Tourism White Paper, which was developed in 1996. This is one of the key fundamental policy documents within the tourism sector. And within the Tourism White Paper, it actually illustrates that in order for us to have a functioning tourism sector in the country, government has to lead the process, and industry has to drive the implementation of tourism initiatives. It has to be a community-based type of a program, and it's labor-intensive. By that statement, what we're actually trying to illustrate, we're trying to illustrate the partnership that needs to exist between government, private sector, the community, and the labor, so that we're able to have a viable tourism industry in the country. As we all know, honorable members, is that tourism is actually a concurrent function, which means, therefore, that provinces have a very important role to play in terms of implementing programs, especially when you look at your tourism human resource development strategy. National department on its own, it cannot actually begin to succeed without the support that we are supposed to get from provinces. This strategy came as a result of the conference that we had in 2006, and this was a conference that was actually focusing on skills, and remember we even conducted a skills audit in 2007. Out of the outcomes of the conference and the skills audit, then there was a very clear expression that began to say that we would need to develop a tourism HRD that would begin to look at how do we begin to improve the human capital that we have within the sector. Why the development of the Tourism Human Resource Development Strategy? I think it's important for us to understand that people are very important to the success of any organization. It's important for us to have a workforce that is skilled, that is able to deliver to our mandate. And the skills audit that we conducted actually pointed us to a direction that began to illustrate that there was a general lack of service culture and ethos within the industry. And therefore, based on that, we had to
say to ourselves, what is it that we need to do in terms of addressing such an issue of having a lack of service ethos and culture? As I have indicated earlier, people are very important for any success of any organization. Without having skilled people, it's going to be very difficult for any organization to begin to carry out any strategic priorities. The other important reason for this strategy was to ensure that we actually have a sustainable supply of talent to the organization. We need to ensure that we have enough number of people that will be able to carry out the mandate of various organizations. Strategy also seeks to ensure that the sector is able to generate and sustain its human capital needs. Skills development is able to keep pace with the growth of the industry. I'm sure in the earlier presentations that were made to the Portfolio Committee, it was actually indicated that tourism is actually growing. Tourism has actually even surpassed gold. How do we ensure, therefore, as this sector, that we are able to keep up with this pace of growth, we are able to have enough human capacity that is able to address the growth that we're talking about? The methodology of this strategy, we had to assess the status of the tourism human resource development in the sector and also to determine the needs that are within the sector. We had to identify strategic focus areas for the strategy that are responsive to the tourism growth and the overall development framework. It was very important for us to actually begin to identify those high-level areas that would be responsive to the growth of the strategy. We also have to review the focus of the tourism industry and ensure that this strategy is responsive to the sector priorities. What was also important for us is that whilst we were in the process of actually developing the strategy, there was also another process, a broad government process, where government was looking at the development of the National Human Resource Development Strategy. So we had to ensure that the tourism strategy is actually aligned to the broader government thinking so that it does not actually find itself sitting completely outside the broad National Human Resource Development Strategy. It's a comprehensive strategy that is a five-year strategy that will be reviewed actually every year on an annual basis. It's also a strategy that has action plans and implementation guidelines, because our view was that it's pointless to develop just a silent document that won't even give you implementation guidelines. The vision for the strategy itself says we want to have a sustained and efficient human capital formation to grow a service-oriented and world-class tourism destination. That is the vision for the Tourism Human Resource Development Strategy. This slide, members, just illustrates the size of the industry. It tells you that we're having about three subsectors within the tourism sector. We're looking at your hospitality sector, your travel and tourism, conservation and tourist guiding. It begins to tell you how many number of employers do we have and employees. And I think I need to highlight that these are the numbers that came from the skills audit that was conducted in 2007, and maybe the numbers have slightly changed now. They have increased actually. I won't go into details as to the numbers that we have, but just to get an idea that we are actually talking about an industry here that has got large number of employees. Then we look in terms of the strategic imperatives of this strategy. In terms of service ethos and culture, I think it's important for us to actually begin to say that in order for us to grow tourism and provide a memorable experience and ensure that we have repeat visits, it's important for the sector to look at its service ethos, and it's also important to inculcate the culture of tourism, especially when we're looking at communities. The other imperative speaks to the strengthening of the educational foundation and building human capital in the sector. What is important here is that it's important for us to ensure that we have people that are trained in relevant skills that meet the needs of the industry. The skills audit results pointed to a direction that said we are actually having quite a number of graduates within the tourism sector, but who are not actually trained in terms of meeting the needs of the sector. We are having quite a lot of proliferation of various institutions, and if you look at the curriculum of those institutions, it does not actually begin to talk to one another. So you would have a situation of getting a tourism graduate that would come from a University of Johannesburg or from Boston College, but when you look at the content and the modules that were actually presented to these learners, it's actually water and oil. So it's important for us to ensure that we actually have a very good foundation in terms of education. It's important for us to ensure that what we get from these institutions is actually what the industry wants and what the industry needs in order for us to become competitive as a destination. We also need to ensure that what we get is actually quality and we have consistency in training. As I have earlier indicated that you would have different kinds of training modules that would come from different institutions. And it's important for us to ensure that we begin to build consistency and we begin to promote equality in terms of what we get from the institutions. The next important imperative talks to the commitment, the collaborative effort, and a joint action. What we need to understand is that it's important for government and the private sector to work together in terms of delivering and in terms of ensuring that when we are responding to the needs of the sector itself, we actually work together as a united force. Because we need to realize that government really is there to set policy frameworks. Government is there to level the playing field. But we need the industry because that's where the action actually takes place. We need that viable partnership, therefore, that will be between a government and an industry. That's what the next bullet point will talk to. The other important imperative talks to the consolidating and streamlining disparate initiatives into a coherent and articulated structure. What we're actually saying there is that it's important for us to actually to begin to identify initiatives that begin to address the gaps that are highlighted in the strategy. And we need to have structures that would be in place that would begin to address your HRD initiatives or imperatives. The training, we need to ensure that we have a demand-led planning in skills development. The current situation that we had then when we were developing the strategy was that we were having a planning scenario that is actually not being informed by the demand. So the view was that we would need to have a demand-led training in skills development. We need to train relevant skills that speaks to what the industry is looking into. The other important area was building competencies in management and leadership in both private and public sector. There was a glaring gap there in terms of skills levels and competencies when you look at the management structure and leadership between the public and the private sector. And it's important for us to actually build those competencies to ensure that we become a competitive destination. The other objective or imperative talks to incentive-driven promotion of the HRD sector. What is important here is that we need to ensure that we begin to incentivize especially people that have been trained within the sector, so that we become a sector that begins to care about its people. We become a sector that begins to invest in its people. The other important imperative talks about building capacity in communities. What is important here is that we need to ensure that our communities, they begin to see value in tourism. Our community needs to begin to see benefits that could be derived from tourism. It's important for us to go out there and begin to conscientize our people so that they can we can begin to build that tourism culture within them. So having painted the picture, therefore, of what is why the rationale behind the strategy, the objectives of the strategy, and we started a process of identifying strategic initiatives that begin to address the gaps as expressed in the strategy itself. And one of the important initiatives that we are driving as a national department in collaboration with CETA and KZN, which is the province that is hosting at this particular time, speaks to the Tourism Careers Expo. We have had this initiative for the past 2 years, and this year will be our third year where we're actually having the Careers Expo. It's going to be in Durban. Coupled with the expo, we are, remember, this is an initiative that is supposed to serve as a platform where we have your educators, learners, and industry interacting. So what emanated out of the Careers Expo was a need to actually empower your educators so that we have educators that have that knows the industry. We have educators that are well-informed. So we are conducting educator seminars throughout the industry. We are supplying them with information and knowledge so that they become better educators and are able to engage the learners. The other important initiative speaks to the Tourism Leadership Dialogue, which is an initiative where we are creating a platform between the private sector and the public sector so that they can begin to talk about new developments, to talk about contentious issues within tourism. The other one is the Tourism Service Excellence Initiative, where we are trying to improve the levels of service within the country. This came about as well as a result of the skills audit exercise where we were talking about the lack of service issues. So it's an initiative that seeks to improve the levels of service within the industry. The other initiative talks about your tourism ambassadors, where we are actually looking at unemployed graduates. We are actually training them in consultation with, we had a partnership last day with CETA and LOC, where we trained plus minus 20,000 ambassadors so that they are the people that will be able to impart relevant information and knowledge about the tourism products, about the events, about the offerings that we have in the country to our visitors. The other important initiative talks about your thematic capacity building. This talks about quite a range of capacity building initiatives where we're looking at training of chefs, training of tourist guides, training of your guides and unemployed and frontline staff in different foreign languages. These are the initiatives that are actually, that will enable us to become a competitive destination because we'll be having the relevant knowledge and the relevant skills. The other initiative talks about the tourism curriculum review, and I think I've alluded to the fact that as a country, we are having a situation where we would have different, for example, you would have different qualifications, and therefore we want to begin to streamline the qualifications that we actually have within the country. The other one, which is actually a very important initiative, which is also a part of this current, the mandate of the current government, is looking at issues of providing decent work. Chairperson, I won't go into details really in terms of what happened around Tourism Careers Expo, but I've just highlighted what the initiative seeks to achieve. So if you allow me, I won't go into details in terms of all these initiatives. What I will quickly run into because of time, I think I will have to stress this one, especially the last part, around the Tourism Service Excellence Initiative. What is happening now is that out of the research results that we received, it was actually, there was a recommendation that we would need to conduct an upskilling program where we train our frontline staff, where we train our executive and our senior management in terms of, so that they become aware about the importance of rendering a service. So what we're currently doing in preparation for the World Cup, and our view is that this is one of the legacy projects for the tourism for the 2010 World Cup, is the training of frontline staff and training of service providers to be training of trainers. so that they are able to even go further after the World Cup and begin to train people within the tourism value chain. This is one of the initiatives that we're actually embarking upon just before the World Cup as a department. I think what is important here is that we need to realize that we are having a tourism human resource development strategy that was developed in 2008, which was before the establishment of the new ministry. And we had, therefore, to ensure that this strategy speaks to the broad national tourism sector strategy. So we had to ensure that there is an alignment in terms of what is contained in the strategy and what is being proposed in the national tourism sector strategy. As we're speaking now, we can comfortably say that we're having 95% alignment. There are areas that came that were pronounced in the national tourism sector strategy that relate to decent work, for example, that relates to rural development. So our view is that when we are implementing the strategy going forward, we need to make a conscious effort that begins to say that we begin to address those two areas, your decent work. How do we improve the working conditions within the sector? How do we ensure that we begin to actually involve outlying communities that are there so that they can begin to participate and make a meaningful contribution to the sector? The following slides, Chairperson, they speak to the medium-term implementation plan. And I know that in the last sitting, we presented our medium-term expenditure framework strategic plan. And really, this is just, we are trying to re-emphasize areas that we actually presented there. What we're saying here is that in terms of our MTF period, we will be focusing on the provision of decent work within the tourism sector. We will look at issues of providing excellent people development within the tourism sector, and we will be focusing on young people. We want to ensure that the sector becomes a competitive sector. And in terms of the deliverables that are within these three key performance areas, we are saying that in this current financial year, we are looking at the development of the decent work framework. We need to ensure that there is compliance within the tourism sector in the outer years. So what we will do this year, we will develop a baseline, we will develop a framework that speaks to decent work framework. We will begin to define what does it mean. We'll define decent work in terms of tourism. And in the outer years, we're looking at signing the MOU with the industry so that they begin to implement what would come out of the research. And in the outer years, we're looking at implementation of the framework. We're also looking at a situation where we want to ensure that South Africans, they become part of the labor force within the sector itself. The reason for this is that we are mindful of the fact that we're having many non-South Africans that are currently employed within the sector, and therefore we want to change the complexion. We are also looking at issues of empowering the educators so that they are able to impart relevant information to the learners, and we also want to provide experiential learning for them so that they can begin to have first-hand experience. We will also want to ensure that we sign a compact with the industry, because we want to see a situation where industry will be able to place these educators so that they are actually able to gain that experience. We also want to see a situation where the industry begins to even place unemployed tourism graduates as well. The next slide speaks to some of the initiatives that are under the key performance area. And this one talks to the list of scarce and critical skills needed by the sector. What we are saying here is that we are mindful of the fact that emanating from the results of the skills audit in 2007, there was a list of scarce and critical skills that were actually short within the industry. And going forward, we need to plan towards the provision of that. And we know that, for example, we just have to review the skills audit that we conducted and theatre will actually play a very important role in terms of actually delivering that part. We will also looking at targeted training initiatives where we will train not only our officials at the national office, but we'll also look at tourism officials that are within provinces and within municipalities. That would be our targeted intervention. We're also looking at placement of tourism graduates so that they're able to gain experiential learning, and we have set targets there. We are also looking at training of young people as chefs. This is one of the critical skills that we don't actually have within the country, and we have set our targets there for the over the MTS period, and our view is that the department will have to work very close with CETA in terms of ensuring that we're able to achieve the numbers as articulated there. We will continue with training our young people as ambassadors of the country, because our view is that if we have a pool of people that we're able to train and we're able to place these individuals at the key strategic points when we're hosting major events, they will be able to impart knowledge about product offerings, about what the country is all about. The other key important focus area during the MTS period talks about delivering the world-class visitor experience. And this is actually very much related to the issue of developing service ethos within the sector. We are looking at the implementation of the service excellence initiative. And we are also looking at training 250,000, which is a project that I indicated, frontline staff. They will be trained in preparation for the World Cup. There will be also a training of trainers that will be conducted there. We also want to ensure that the industry complies to service excellence framework. We will develop standards, and we will have a programs that will be certified in terms of excellence. We will also implement the framework governing the Tourism Service Excellence Center. I think what we are saying here is that within the country, we acknowledge the fact that we don't actually have a tourism center of excellence. We want to come up with a tourism service center, a tourism center of excellence, where we will be able to take the pool of our tourism personnel, and they will be able to actually receive training from that center of excellence, and they will be able to go back to their places of employment and begin to implement whatever they would have learned from this center. Our view is that this is a long-term project. We know that it's not achievable right now, but we will start by developing a concept document that will begin to define what this center will be, and we'll look at issues of resourcing at the center itself. That's it, Chatessa. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. To the department, Ms. Seti. We had time up to about 11 o'clock from Seti. And it's either we ask questions of clarification up to 11 o'clock, break for 5 minutes and come back to Teta, or perhaps we continue straight up to about 5 past 11 or 11 o'clock. What do you think is better? Mama Chivase and Dr. Farai.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the briefing first and then finish one. Otherwise, if we go for questions, they can take it longer.
And I'm sorry, it was just a housekeeping business. I'm sorry. Over then to Teta. But There is there are a number of initiatives that obviously will require resources and capacities, and perhaps in some instances inspectors and then monitors. Perhaps if when you answer questions, it's best to prepare those areas so that we know that if you say, for instance, there will be decent work, and there will be people that will see to it that there is decent work. If you say there's development of young people and competition and so forth, there are resources and capacities to do those types of things. Because without capacities, ours will remain just statements which are empty, and then people say we make promises without implementation. Perhaps let us look at that and then assure us that with time we are arranging that we should be in a position to deliver. Keta.
So person
of the portfolio committee to all of them and your committee, we must thank you for giving us the opportunity indeed to come and do our presentation so that we can see what are the gaps from what we are going to present on the way forward. And indeed, I will therefore give over to the CEO, Mike Sotete, to actually do the actual presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Mike Sotete. Indeed, I am accompanied by Mr. Muzim Wanda, who is the Skills Development Manager, and will share the presentation that we're going to present to you. It is indeed a great pleasure that we're given this opportunity once more, but to be able to interact with the Portfolio Committee of Tourism, but to be able to put into perspective what TITA in this sector is actually meant to do. As a premise of the presentation, I need to say, though, Mr. Chairman, that, look, we were part of the Department of Labor up until the 30th of October 2009, and due to political landscaping, a new department was put in place, which is now called the Department of Higher Education and Training. And the department, in terms of the Skills Development Act, that took over these institutions, which are called sector education authorities, from the 1st of November 2009. There has been a myriad of things that needed to be put in place, right, for purposes of ensuring that, look, the department, as new as it may be, that it is able to forge ahead, right, and deliver on what it is actually expected to do. Firstly, it is an issue that is going to be in the public's domain, the re-landscaping of the CETAs, right, which CETAs would stay and which one would not stay. And that will come sometime, I think, in July, August. The next one is going to be the National Skills Development Strategy. As you're probably aware that, look, we are now, the minister has extended the National Skills Development Strategy Phase 2 for additional year in order to give him time to be able to consult with all the stakeholders. And hopefully that has been done, right, we're now going to be having the next Skills Development Strategy for the next 5 years. Having listened to the department in its presentation here, the issues that they are actually mentioning here will be more appropriate to be presented in those particular forums that are going to be taking out throughout the country. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then coming back to the specific issue that we prepare ourselves, we thought that, look, it is important that, look, we should give the perspective in terms of the role TITA is actually playing in the bigger scheme of things. TITA supports and assists employers to articulate their post structure or their program or their organogram in respect of occupations, right, on the organizing framework of occupations. While TITA cannot do actual mapping of their member companies, a methodology and support software was developed by the Department of Labor then, right, to be able to assist employers to find appropriate occupations. It is well and fine to say there's a chef, so nationally, when I say nationally, in the country and internationally, we need to be able to agree what constitutes a chef. What does a chef mean? Because in some places you may find that, look, the person who is a professional cook, they want to call him a chef, and the person who is a chef, they want to then call him a professional cook, right? So that particular organizing framework of occupation, it is there for purposes of clearly defining those job specifics or occupations for purposes of everybody being on the same page or him sheet on that one. The next role that we do is we conduct a research, right, where we would be in the position to identify what constitutes scarce and critical skills in the sectors that we are operating. Right, and we use that OFOs, ne, right, to develop the sector skills plan. We are meant to come up with a tourism sector skills plan, sports sector skills plan, right, and for purposes of ensuring that, look, those particular sectors are clear in terms of what is their plans, ne, for that particular sector. In line with the national development, skills development strategy, right, we are saying NSDS is a, it's actually setting up the framework within which we need to be able to operate. TITA develops qualifications. Right. We would be failing as an institution if we do not see to it that, look, there are qualifications in the sector, right from sports to conservation, right, to any sector, because any training that needs to take place, it has to take place within a particular framework, and those qualifications are critical. We register those qualifications with SAQA, right, and we're fully aware that, look, there's a landscaping that is also taking place in SAQA. There's now going to be Quality Council of Trade Occupations, right, and having registered those qualifications, we then have to apply to be in our scope. We then have training providers that apply to have the scope of those particular qualifications in their operations. Right. We develop the qualifications, the learning programs to address those particular scarce and critical skills. Right. TITA further develops a career path for each occupation. We have to ensure that, look, there's a link between the relevant qualifications that we have, because if you are going to have qualifications that are scattered all over, right, when workers or any member, learners take those qualifications, are not having a career path, then it becomes just a waste of resources for those learners. TITA then funds training in addressing the scarce and critical skills. I think the funding issue is something that we need to talk about it, right? Because the funding, as we're probably aware, that look, this sector or the CETAs, how they operate. We operate of getting money from 1% of the payroll of that particular company collected by SARS. Right. By the time it reaches us here, it's already 80% of what has been collected. Right. And the fact of the matter then remains that, look, we have to disburse back to those particular companies, right, those who have deemed it necessary to conduct training. So we disperse back 50%, but then we remain with 30%, 10% is for administration, and 20% is for discretionary grants. Now, the training that we are saying, or programs that we are saying, we are funding them. We will fund them from those discretionary funds. Limited as they may be, due to the fact that, look, this sector, it is a sector that is actually least transformed. It is not paying, right, and is dependent, the workers are dependent on tips that we are actually giving them in the hotels or in the restaurants. So as a result, a lot of workers are not in the in the skill structure for purposes of collecting the skills levy, right? So we are actually not collecting sufficiently and due to those things. TITA then, it is also making the initiatives outlined above as supported by the following legislation. Having said all those things, this is the legislative framework which within which we are operating in. It's the Skills Development Act, right, and that has subsequently been amended, Act Number 37, in 2008. Right. We also have the National Qualification Framework, Act Number 67 of 2008. That was enacted shortly, and it's to provide the qualification framework. Right. It also sets out the Quality Council, which are a new institution, right, which is sector-based, and that will be responsible for development and quality assurance of qualifications in the sub-frameworks of the NQF. The NQF will henceforth be organized in three coordinated sub-frames, namely the general, further education and training, the higher education, and for trades and occupations. I take it that, look, we are fully aware also of the fact that, look, the Skills Development Act is responsible for making sure that, look, there is a definition of learnerships, right, that it also makes sure that, look, there is apprenticeships, the skills programs, and other prescribed learning programs which include structured work experience component. Those are the legislative within which we operate in ensuring that, look, we take the process forward. If I may now drill down to the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, which is an institution that has just been on the 24th of February been launched by the Minister of Higher Education. Right, he has formed it, and it is up and running. Right, and we're hopeful that, look, it will be able to so. The purpose of it is to ensure that there is a skills development forum in each province. For the first time, we will now see provinces making a contribution in terms of what kinds of skills, right, that needs to be in place in their particular provinces. And secondly, is to ensure that, look, the organizing framework for occupations is actually strengthened. There's going to be a lot of consultation between various government departments in their own right, in their scope of their operation, to ensure that, look, we sing from the same hymn sheet, if I may say. Right. Organizing framework of occupation is a skills-based coded classification system. It is built on a similar principle for those of the South African Standard Classification of Occupation, SASCOC. Familiar to all players through its use by the stats, South Africa in October, household and labor force. SASCOC was also used either earlier in the Department of Labor Employment Equity reporting format. However, moving into the future, SASCOC will no longer be the basis for reporting equity. The OFOs represent a significant enhancement on the SASCOC for skills development planning and implementation purposes in that it calculates, it captures all the jobs in the form of occupations, similar to SASCOC. Right. The OFO is constructed from the bottom up, analyzing jobs and identifying similarities in terms of the tasks and skills, categorizing similar jobs into occupations, classifying those occupations into occupational groups at increasing level of the generality. Right. And in essence, the organizing framework for occupation is a coded occupational classification system. Right. Mr. Chairman, these are the groupings that have been so far set out. You would have, if you go from left to right, you'll have NSDS, right? That is the National Skills Strategy. You will have the NQF, which is the National Qualification Framework. We'll have the skills level, right? And you will also have the Occupational Framework of Occupation, major groupings, right? This system is intended to ensure that, look, on the issue of the skills development as well as on the side of the education, right, as well as the side where the skills are there, that we are speaking from the same document in that we are able to classify the jobs accordingly, right, and we are able to say these jobs as they stand, these are the qualifications that will be required, right. As you can see on the NSDS advance, you will then have the NQF, which will run from 10, 9, 8, 7, up to 6, right? And you will then have the skills level being 5, right? You will then have the section which deals with managers and professionals. And so that's how this thing is actually intended to. And these are the jobs that have been classified, and I don't have to bore the members on this, right? Okay. Now, employers are to cluster post titles in job titles that can then be mapped to occupation on the OFO. New post titles generated in the organization should be linked to occupations when they are created. And this needs to happen from every organization. We have seen it in various companies. They tend to come up with all kinds of occupations, right, who are not having any meaningful. And when you ask us to, for the person to be able to do this particular job, what qualifications he needs to have or what training he needs to go through, he has no clue in terms of what happens because they just decided to thumbsuck some of these titles, right, or these occupations. So we are now going to ensure that, look, the industries which we are operating with, right, that when we talk about a manager, we all understand what that manager means, right? So OFOs could be used to guide the naming convention for job and post titles. A starting point for this naming convention must always be the descriptor of the occupations of the workforce. These are those occupations. There is the code that is given. There is the title. There is the specialization. There is then the national qualification framework. In other words, the education level that needs to happen. Right. So this is how they are classified. Right, you can then see right at the bottom, right, 351301, it's the occupation is chef, right, and specialization is going to be chef de pâté, sous de chef, executive chef, commis chef, demi chef, head chef. Those will be, those are the specialization of those particular chefs that you have. But you can see the environmental research scientist.
Yes.
whilst the system is getting the necessary power, right, you have the hard copies, Mr. Chairperson, where we can still continue. Right, we can continue on where we have ended, where we were dealing with the TITA list of scarce and critical skills. I was on the basis of trying to define, right, these particular occupations. Right, there's the occupation 141301, right, which is, deals with hotel or motel managers. That's the occupation at the level, right, and the duty, the specialization is going to be the duty manager. So we have categorized them in that manner, Mr. Chairman, for the next three slides, right, in this regard, for purposes of the industry to be able to understand precisely what are the issues here. The next slide is titled NSDS, TITA NSDS Targets. It's 2 pages, Mr. Chairman. We thought that it is also imperative that we share with you, right, what we, under normal circumstances, enter into an agreement with the relevant department which we are actually reporting to. In this case, it's the Department of Higher Education. We have just signed a service level agreement with them in terms of what is that that we are going to deliver for this current financial year, right? And those agreements, service level agreement, has been brought to the portfolio committee. We're just waiting to hear as to whether they've been approved or not. I'm now referring to the portfolio committee of the higher education and training. Right. But just to give a snapshot in terms of what we have, that in we will, as a matter of course, ensure that look, we conduct a research in the next couple of months, right, for the sector, right, and have a skills audit to update the sector skills plan that we currently have, right, and that we have put our processes in place to be able to do that. Secondly, we are meant to train and capacitate our skills development facilitator. This is the name which, under normal circumstances, we call the training managers. Training managers are meant to be trained on a regular basis to be able to be up to speed with the development or the landscaping in the training and education. We are meant to also have a career guidance counselors or career exhibition. This is intended to ensure that look, people that are actually interacting with learners at shop floor, interacting with learners at school level, right, are able to advise the learners appropriately in terms of their careers that are there in the sector. Right. The next issue is we need to support the SMMEs and assist them wherever possible, those that are levy payers. In this particular case, we assist them by ensuring that, look, we facilitate the payment of their levies they have paid. You're probably aware, Mr. Chairman and everybody here, that the filing season for the workplace skills plan is the end of June, that is the 30th of June. We've already gone very extensively to communicate with our sectors that, look, they need to submit what we call their workplace skills plan, right, and the previous annual training report, right, purely to ensure that, look, we are able to see as to who are the people that need to be then funded going forward. The next indicator is we are meant to support and assist small BEE firms in the sector, including the BEE co-ops. Right. I must say that, look, we have been having various programs to assist the SMMEs, particularly in the catering sector. Right. And we have been successful, despite the fact that, look, there have been very difficulties, right, to actually establish the to establish the BE co-ops in the sector. Right. There's always a difficulty to be able to find co-ops in this particular sector. Right. But we then believe that, look, as time goes on, right, the community will then see the need of entering into the co-ops movement for purposes of ensuring that, look, they are actually leveraging on the economic advantage that is there. So that's the issue relating to the BEE in the sector. It's very, 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 in fact, the co-ops in the sector are actually very few. We are meant to ensure that we skill and make sure that, look, we have the programs that will enhance skills of those employed workers. This, we do it with passion, right, in terms of making sure that, look, the workers at the workplaces are actually duly trained, right? And the one that we always have difficulties is the training of the ABET learners, right? In the sector, the literacy level in the travel and tourism, right, it's not easy to be able to find the ABET learners, right? And we have programs that we have actually embarked on in the conservation, right? We have gone to sand parks, we have gone to various conservation authorities, right, and made grants available for the those particular parks to be able to take the opportunity. Right, and the 3.2 is actually intended for the support that we give to the communities, community-based co-ops as well as the community-based organizations. Right, so in our small way, right, we've gone out to the communities, right, and looked for organized rather than to deal with individual, right, because organized communities are better than to dealing with, because otherwise you will be classified as being corrupt if you deal with individuals and the community. 4.1 is skills programs to support unemployed youth to pursue the FET qualification. We also do this with passion. In the last 3 years, we have taken almost 6,000 learners that are coming from various FETs, various technicons, right, who lacked the experiential learning, right, and made sure that, look, there is a workplace program for them. So we must say in this meeting here that, look, the companies that we have dealt with and various institutions have actually came to a very huge support for us to be able to accomplish this particular issue. Right. And the next one is those 4.2 provision of the workplace experience for youth. Right. This is those that were unemployed, right, who have actually qualified and they are not working. We then make sure that, look, we take them through to these programs, right, and it has been a very huge support. I'm sure when Muzi comes in, he will then present the part of how far we have gone in terms of those particular issues. Support of the, in fact, the mentoring and support of the newly created businesses in the sector, right, that's the role that we do, right, as well as the support to institutions of sectoral or occupational experience. We have over the last, I think last year, accredited or have approved about 7 institutions that are deemed to be excellent in the sector, right? And we then had a function where we honor them for the success of being appointed as sectoral excellence. Right. The next one relates to the support of the FETs, right, which is now institutions that would provide new venture creation. And here it's FETs, or here is the institutions that will be able to provide learning on how new businesses, new venture is new businesses, right? So we've gone all out our way to get the youth that are interested to be entrepreneurs, right, and then said, well, here's a program that you could be able to get in, right? So that, in our view, has been a success, right? The next
One is the capacity building to the teacher training providers. Right. When the skills development was put in place, everybody thought that, look, there are training providers out there. And it is only when there was no output coming out when people then realized, look, there are no training providers. But in our sector, I think in 2001, there were about only two accredited training providers. So as an institution, we then had to work very hard to ensure that, look, we capacitate those people that are willing to be training providers, put them into various programs, but and we are very happy that to date we have about almost 180 training providers that have been accredited through various interventions that TITA had. Right. So this is the framework of the NSDS targets as set out by the department. And what happened in this year is that the new department said, well, we're not going to tamper with this. We're just going to fine-tune it. Make sure that, look, when you submit your service level agreement, it deals with the government, it deals with the 10-point government priorities. But your service level agreement will not mean anything if it's not going to assist people in the rural, if it's not going to assist people who are vulnerable out there. So we had to ensure that, look, we define our service level agreement to be able to take into consideration those 10-point government strategies that we have. And, Mr. Chairman, I think from here, Muzi will then take over, right, and deal with the achievements against those particular indicators right, that we have. Thanks.
Thank you. Perhaps before we go to the next section, our tea has just come. So let us break for 10 minutes and then get a presentation from I don't have his correct name. Mr. Muzi Mwanda. Okay. Mr. Muzi Mwanda. Okay, no. Let us first break, and then Mr. Mwanda, you are going to then give us a presentation starting from 20 past. It's quarter past, 25 past. Exactly. Whether people are in or not.
Career guidance, the training of skills development facilitators, including the National Tourism Careers Expo, which has been mentioned by the department as well, where we are targeting youth in schools, particularly in higher education as well as in high schools, and there are teachers or educators who are involved but in the training of tourism. Well, the other two targets refers to the actual companies. We refer to them as employers. We classify them as big, small, and medium companies, the kind of support that we give to them. And the next target speaks to the learnerships. We will then have a target defined or agreed with the Department of Higher Education and Training that will train so much. So in this report, we then indicate that against that target, we have trained so many employed learners and so many unemployed learners. And the next target then refers to the graduates and learners in educational institutions that we have already referred to. We have got figures that have been presented in the report here. We have also referred to the NGOs, the community-based organizations, or BE cooperatives that we are supporting. And in this indicator, we also state as to how many of those we have supported. And you'll also be reminded that our stakeholders are divided into two, those who pay levies and those who do not qualify to pay levies. And this indicator also caters for us to support those stakeholders who do not qualify to pay levies. And the last one is the report on the development of new businesses, particularly by youth. We have a full qualification, it's a one-year qualification called New Venture Creation, which is a learnership, and we put learners into that program, and we are indicating here the number of learners who were trained in the past financial year. The last two talks to the training providers. What is it that we have done? We have already indicated as to the number of training providers that we have supported, whether they are for new venture creation or it's just general training providers who are doing training in this sector. Chair, that's the end of the report.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Mwanda. Let us then each have 2 minutes to ask our questions, and before then we expect the replies. Mam Chivase, please let us try and keep it to 2 minutes so that we can. We are not having a lot of time. We are having about 30 minutes now.
Thank you, Chairperson. As far as TETA is concerned, I can understand or just my own conclusions that they're the providers of whatever that they were explaining. But when it comes to the training, I have a big concern that you mentioned the training of the youth. No mention of the training of the women, no mention of the training of people with disabilities. Why?
Okay. Is there a second question? Maluleke, then Pamukwanya, then Zulu, then Shin.
Thank you, Chair. On the presentation of the department, we are impressed, Chair, on the how they are addressing the issue of youth. But my concern is that, Chair, people in rural areas, they don't have information concerning these trainings. And in these numbers that they are presented, I want to know how are they dividing these numbers? Are they dividing them in provinces, or are they focusing in provinces per year? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. So it's rural areas and provinces, but provincial spread. Pamukwanya.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wish to extend thanks to the department for the presentation. But one of my questions has been partly covered by the previous speaker, but I would like to know what methodologies do they use to harness the people from the rural areas to get involved. But further to that, I want to find out how do you identify which community is supposed to benefit? Because in the rural areas where we come from, there is nothing known about these opportunities. What is their reach out strategy? For the time being, thank you, Chairman. The decent work, how is it classified? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It is very interesting to listen and sometimes to hear a person touching things that there are always a problem with us when we are in our constituencies. When you mention about the youth, unemployed learners, and have workshop with the many people in different areas, but you'll find us in most cases mentioning the rural all the time, because people there, they have no information. I had a meeting during this constituency period with many youth, but they have no information at all. All this what we're talking here does not reach them there in the rural. And I can appreciate if maybe the last presenter can just give me his number and so on, so that we can just invite him to go where we are working. Because only these people in the urban areas and the cities, that they are always in the advantage of all what the government is delivering. But this makes our people to exode from the rural now to the urban areas, where there are so many opportunities for the young people. We have a problem with this, but I hope the last president is going to give me this, and then I want to invite him to go where I come from, because to say, where have you done these workshops? Where have you done this training for unemployed? Maybe you are not going to tell me in the rural area, not a single area in the rural. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a couple of questions for both sets of presenters. For the department first, I would please like some more details on the Centre of Excellence. Who's actually going to run it? What's actually going to be its reason for it? Is it going to be a government-run thing? What kind of input is it going to be from industry in this, from the hospitality industry? The other one is this decent work framework. When can we expect some details of what that is going to be? And is it going to take into account the industry needs and the seasonality of the hospitality industry, the tourism industry, which I think is something we don't pay enough attention to when we talk about decent work? Then the ambassadors. Now, presumably these are ambassadors for big events like the football. What happens to these ambassadors when the big events aren't on? Do they just sort of sit on the side of the road? Do they get jobs somewhere? What happens to them? Then on CETA, my concern with this entire presentation is that it's very, very heavy on bureaucracy. And training people to meet government indicators, What about the industry indicators? Is there any indication that you're taking into account what the industry actually needs and what the industry can actually absorb? It's all very well training hundreds of youngsters to be find jobs in the hotel industry, but if the hotel industry can't absorb them, there's no point in training them. You know, I have a sort of feeling that we're just training whoever comes to the door, irrespective of whether there's an opportunity for them to actually have a job. And so I think that we're you're an education sausage machine. You're pushing out people with qualifications into a market that isn't there. And I'm just afraid that we're training too many people for a market that can't absorb them and creating unrealistic expectations amongst these youngsters. The other one was the new venture creation, training young people into some sort of tourism industry. What kind of support is there once you've trained them? Are they being trained to fill a market need, or are they just being trained to have a certificate? And this is my whole problem with this whole CETA presentation, I'm afraid, is that it's about giving people certificates and then they fall into a hole.
I think that was the first round of questions. Disability women, rural and spread, decent work information, center of excellence, absorption and expectations, and potential support.
If I may start, Mr. Chairman, from TITA, on questions that are actually relevant for TITA, I think Ms. Chibase has indicated that he wanted to know whether in our programs do we deal with youth, do we deal with women, do we deal with disability. But, and say, certainly this is what we do. But our programs are actually geared for the youth. But, and you will find that, look, programs that we are actually funding, there's a difference between the programs that we fund and the programs that the companies embark upon, and we then give them money. So companies, in fact, the programs that we fund ourselves, right, when we award that particular grant or that tender, we make it very specific to the person that is going to deliver the program, right, that we have the following yardstick. In your intake of learners, right, you need to take 80% being for black people or Africans, and 45% needs to be women. Right. And 4% needs to be for disabled or disability people. Right. So those are the indicators, right? And we measure that particular provider, the intake of learners. And you will appreciate that, look, when he now says, look, I have now taken the learners, we then say, look, tell us, are they all black people? Are they all, have you met the 45% of women, right? So that's the process that we embark upon. I have said earlier on, in respect of the current year, the DG of the Department of Higher Education was not willing to sign the service level agreement because he then said, for my portfolio committee to agree on the service level agreement of all 23 CETAs, I want you to go back and align your service agreement with the government 10-point strategy. Indicate in your service level agreement the extent to which you are going to address the rural. Right. And indeed, we then had to do that. Now, in our strategy in going forward, right, the rural, we have made sure that, look, the youth in the rural, the women in the rural, right, where we have the FET colleges, because they appear to be well-placed in those particular areas, right, that they will then be the centers which we are actually interacting. Right. Now, we now expected right, to ensure that, look, we have the career exhibitions in those particular rural. We have been already approached in a number of parts of the rural, Kersibande, right, and down in Umhlabuyalingana, right, for purposes of coming to say, these are the careers, right, and now what do we then do? Of course, the challenge is going to be always for us. If at all learners are saying we want to be in a learnership program, then we need to have three parties. We need to have a learner, we need to have an employer, we need to have a training provider in that particular rural area. So those are the challenges that we are always going to find ourselves. But we believe that, look, we will have to surmount that when we reach to that. So that part, in terms of the statistics, Mr. Chairman, we will make those statistics available. Right? We are busy now writing up the annual report. You will then see how do we then dissect in terms of the interventions of these particular critical areas that we have. Right. And with regard to the question of the extent to which we are actually producing, like sausages, we're producing a lot of learners and there's no absorption on the other side. Certainly, it will be a worrying factor if at all that continues to be the case. That's not the true situation. There's a huge number of interventions that we need to have training here. Right. And what we say, companies, we're now coming to the end of June shortly. Give us your plans. Right. And companies, in terms of the laws in this country, for them to be able to be given the grants, they have to give us the plans. And they give us the plans, and they tell us as to what is that they're going to do and where and how. We then said, okay, thank you very much for giving us those plans. Right. And in those plans, they would indicate how many people they will absorb once they have trained. Right. And it is on that basis that from time to time, we now have to remind them that, look, when we had the recent career exhibitions, we then said to them, listen, you have indicated to us that, look, you're going to absorb so many people. Collectively, it's going to be so many thousands. Now, we are now going to announce to the public out there that, look, so many people are going to be required in this particular sector, right? And these are the programs which we are going to support. Right? So, realistically speaking, it is our responsibility to interact with the industry, right, to interact with all the role players in terms of absorption. Of course, the problem comes with the learners that comes from the colleges. Right. As you may be aware, you've got matriculants that write matric, and you've got those matrics that have gone to the colleges and the technicals and the universities. Yes, I would admit that, look, it's always a problem. There's so many number of learners that are coming out, however, they are not being absorbed. We have identified the problem, and the problem relates to the industry does not have confidence on those learners that comes from that particular sector because they are saying they do not have the experiential learning. It is in that regard, Mr. Chairperson, that we had to come up with the intervention of saying those unemployed graduates and those that are about to graduate, if we can then have a grant, right, and agree with employers, please can you give these learners the necessary experience? And that has happened. The statistics indicate that, look, for the last 3 years, right, there's almost 6,000 learners that have gone through, right, and the condition was very clear. Once you have taken them through, please, you must also ensure that, look, a percentage, you are able to take them full-time, and they have done so. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure Muzi wants to add anything.
Through you, Chair. I would just like to add a couple of examples. For example, when we talk of how do we reach rural areas as a CETA, we have just allocated learnerships to what is took place is known as presidential poverty nodal areas. There are initially about 21 of them throughout the country. And as I speak today, some of our staff members are in Mpumalanga this week, and actually are complaining that you cannot spend the whole week in Mpumalanga. What are they doing there? They are actually going to these employers who have applied for the learnership, and we are going to verify if the workplace is suitable to provide training. Well, the report that I've been getting is that it is suitable. In some cases, we have to cut down the number of allocation, because if we train too many, they might not be quality training and so on. And again, as I speak tomorrow, one of our staff member who is a female, she's going to one of the presidential nodal area, which is in Kuruman, that is Halahadi. And she was actually saying she's supposed to drive about 260 kilometers to that place alone, and therefore asking for somebody to come and accompany her. Well, considering that she is a woman, I then said, well, you'll be sleeping over. Maybe it would be wise to indeed get somebody to accompany you. Another example, as of tomorrow, we are supposed to be in Eastern Cape, whereby there is a graduation which has been organized by the Office of the Premier, where we trained quite a number of learners on learnership program. And we are there as some kind of guest speakers and funders to motivate and support the initiatives of the provincial government in that area. Well, I won't go on and on. There is a very long list. And I also want to indicate that we are available to come to any place in the country, as much as we do not have offices all over, and the demand is actually greater than what we can supply, but we do make time and go to the places. So my point there was that we do have a strategy. The government strategy and priorities themselves, they actually cover everything that we are supposed to do. Ours is to ensure that we implement and we follow them as they are. Another thing I'd like to indicate, Chair, is that our training, by its very nature, is occupationally directed. And when we train for employment. Well, of course, we cannot 100% guarantee that everybody who has gone through the training of our training providers will be employed eventually. But we have confidence in the qualifications that are being offered. I would refer to the presentation that was done earlier by the CEO, which is, of course, kind of technical in its sense, but it does indicate the link between the qualifications, the occupations, and the training levels, and that is what we are implementing. There was another question, as to say, when it comes to new venture creation, once they've trained these learners, what do they do? Well, the idea or the aim is to create business people, people who can own and start their own businesses. Of course, in terms of the strategy that we are implementing, we are supposed to support them for at least a year, that is 12 months after they've received their qualification. Well, we have supported some, and I must indicate that it is a challenge. We do need the employers and the businesses out there to come and support us while we do provide that support. Can indicate that it is a challenge on our side, and we are battling, and we are hoping that in this coming financial year what we will have to do is to partner with employers who support new business development so that we can assist those learners to start their businesses, whether it's a car wash kind of a business or it's a catering, small catering business that is happening in the sector. We do provide support. Thank you, Chair.
Just one last, very short. With the board of Twitter has taken a decision that from this financial year, from the 1st of April, we are going to open up offices in three provinces for a start: the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape, and Cape. We expect then people who will be sitting in those offices to make sure that they reach out to the public. Whilst we do that, those provinces where offices are not open yet, we expect the national office, please in Johannesburg, to take care of those. We can assure the committee chair that we can leave our contact person when we conduct numbers, when these offices, in particular in those areas, have been opened, so that you get those contact numbers, so that when you go to your meetings in those areas, you immediately contact with those areas. Because indeed, there is a concentration on the in town, not in rural areas, which is one of the priorities of government to ensure that we reach out. So we can offer that, so that you are able to do that. The last point, Chair, which has been by both my colleagues, training opportunities to get jobs. If you remember the committee, is that even in the old training board, there was this view. Should you, when you take up learners, guarantee employment? Which was problematic, is still problematic now. It's either you train for absorption or you train to flood the market with skilled people. That is the challenge that the act itself is not coming, because if you do that, you say guarantee employment before you take your learners. If either you don't trade, because some employers say, no, unfortunately I won't, but we need that the industry is flooded with people with skills so that no one will import when the need arises. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In attempting to respond to questions related to the department, I think I need to, first of all, indicate that tourism is a concurrent function, which means, therefore, that provinces, they actually have their role to play in terms of ensuring that we're able to deliver according to what we have planned or intended to. In terms of the structures, then, that the department has put in place to ensure that we're able to reach out, there is a Tourism Human Resource Development Committee, which Nozuko, sitting here, chairs. It's a committee that consists of provincial representatives, and it's a committee that seeks to ensure that there is alignment between what national is planning to do and with what provinces they want to do in a particular given financial year. So we are having that kind of a structure where we actually seek to ensure that there's alignment and there's a good understanding in terms of carrying out our plans. There is also another structure which is called Tourism Government Communicators Forum, where you have communicators where they sit and plan and develop a communication strategy. So really we are saying, in terms of reaching out to communities, we are having a two-pronged approach. We are having a communication strategy that is developed by national and provinces in terms of government communicators, where they are supposed to communicate about national initiatives and provincial initiatives. At operational level, we have the HRP committee that is supposed to actually assist us in terms of going out, identify those rural areas where we're targeting at. But I must say that we don't give a quota and begin to say X number of people needs to come from this province. All what we want to ensure is that in terms of all the initiatives that we do, we need to ensure that we have rural communities being represented there, and we rely on the information that will be provided by our provinces.
In terms of the issue around descent work, how is it classified? I think what we presented is a plan for this current financial year. We acknowledge the fact that we don't actually have any baseline in terms of defining descent work in terms of tourism. So we are actually starting from scratch, which means, therefore, that we need to conduct a research or a study so that, number one, we establish the status quo in terms of HRM practices within the sector, and which means, therefore, that we will have consultation sessions with all the stakeholders, and those consultation processes will actually assist us in terms of then developing a framework. So we're starting from scratch, but we're hoping that come end of this financial year, we would have developed a framework, really, that begins to tell us what we want to see when we talk of descent work within the tourism sector. And in terms of service excellence, center of excellence within the tourism, that is also a relatively new initiative which we are starting as a department. We don't have any baseline as we're speaking at the moment, but our view is that we want to ensure that there is a center of excellence that we establish as a national department, which means, therefore, that we will, in developing a concept document related to that, we would need to consult further the stakeholders. But our view is that it's going to be a partnership approach. We want to ensure that we have the industry participating there. We want to ensure that we actually have communities bringing in their people that will be trained. We want to ensure that government is also part in terms of developing that center of excellence, whether we would say government will begin to lay down policy foundations or will be able to finance or identify a building. So we still early days for us, but we acknowledge the fact that we will have to consult widely and develop a concept document that will begin to talk to the needs of the industry. I'm going to hand over to Nozuk or my colleague here. If there are any gaps, perhaps she will be able to fill those. Thank you, Zuki.
Maybe just to like the Center of Excellence itself. We thought about this is a dream that relates to the fact that when you look at Gauteng, you look at KZN, you look at the Western Cape, you actually acknowledge that they've got opportunities and options for doing everything else that is possible within reach. But when you look at the other provinces, the other six, there is no opportunities, no schools enough for those kids. But also if you think about hospitality and you think about tourism and so on, you'll notice that people do not go to hospitality not because they cannot go, but because it is not accessible, possible financially, or because they do not have the funding. So the idea, therefore, is to have a complete center somewhere in one of those provinces where those kids or unemployed people can have access, whether it's hospitality, it's tourism, it's conservation, so that all the facets of tourism are captured by that center of excellence, where all our employees as well can go into the center and get some kind of, upgrading, upskilling, and so on. It also would capture the educator gap that we have with our educators, that we have identified that educators are unable to give us a product that's going to live longer in the name of the learners that they produce because they do not have the capacity themselves. So it is also an opportunity to expose those our educators into that kind of center. That is the dream. But like Umi said, is saying the dream is still going to develop and it's going to be definitely in partnership. We do not have the expertise in terms of carrying out that information into those groupings of people, but we depend on the industry and the expertise that they have. And fortunately, we've got a very good working partnership with our industry to provide us with that expertise. Now, talking to the area of youth, how we are relating to the youth, and in particular, youth in the rural areas. We acknowledge the fact that we're not reaching out to the rural areas. This is where the National Tourism Careers Expo that the CEO also spoke about was initiated,
to say, let's have an expo in the provinces. Let's give an opportunity to the rural kids in every province to be able to attend the expo, get information about the industry, be exposed to the industry, and get to choose careers in the industry because they have an understanding. It has happened. It is going to happen for the third time in KZN. And in every instance, you have had 17,000 learners and educators passing through, getting the industry to talk to them, getting the education and training, higher education, FET expertise people coming to talk to them and motivate them into the industry. These were rural learners I'm talking about being exposed to tourism. It is an attempt to reach out. And inclusive in those numbers that pass through that NTCE are the unemployed tourism graduates, because they are our concern. Of course, they are coming from all over the rural areas. Note that when we talk unemployed graduates, it's not normally the people that are in urban areas, but they are in the rural areas. Even when you spoke about the placement program, is focusing on unemployed graduates, and in most cases, those come from the rural areas. And we are proud to say today we've exposed a few of our rural kids to kinds of learning, like the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, which is an internationally renowned hotel. Now we've got a few of those rural learners in that hotel. We've got about 69 that are currently there, and we're looking at further opportunities to expose more of those rural. Talking about where we capture those, we've got databases that are captured by provinces and the local municipalities so that we can have picking off those learners into those places and so on. I think that is where I wanted, and even in terms of, Ms. Sethi answered the whole issue of saying, how do we come up with the numbers for the training? Sometimes we have quotas for provinces. We have, like, if you talk about the service excellence training that is now at stake for the World Cup, we know that because of the number of matches in any of the provinces, so the number of people that will be trained in any of the, because we're trying to align to the 2010 activity. Therefore, we're saying this number in the Western Cape, this number in the Eastern Cape, because there will be 8 matches, this number in Bombela, because there will be so many. So sometimes we align, and we know when we recruit like that, we get them from the rural areas. And we are able assisted by our provincial counterparts, our agencies in the provinces, as well as they are in link and in sync with the municipalities in terms of getting those numbers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we are running behind. We've got to be out here at our top of stress, and we still have committee program before close. Mom John, let us just be short, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the frontline staff that are going to be trained for the World Cup. You know, for me, I think at this stage, I would really expect the department to say to us, so many out of the 250,000 that we intended to train have been trained, instead of telling us that you are still going to train 250,000. So I think for us it will be more meaningful if you say we planned 250,000 and we have trained so many, we are left with this percentage, and we'll be able to train this percentage before the World Cup comes. Now, secondly, Chairperson, on this question of the young people and finding it difficult to enter the tourism industry, I think that we can understand is the way the tourism industry is structured. But then I've been wondering, you know, as we are discussing here, as to whether there is any coordination, for instance, with the structures like the Youth Development Agency or Umsobomvu, which really get from the government quite a substantial amount of funds. Say, for instance, we have trained your people. Is it not possible to coordinate with the Youth Development Agency or Umsobomvu to say, we've got these people, how can you assist them? You know, something like that. And thirdly, on the question of the Center of Excellence, I would just ask this question. You say you are going to develop a concept document for this. When can the committee expect to see this? What's the time frame? Thank you.
Okay.
thank you, Chairperson. I won't be long, but I'm partly covered. I want to suggest that there are challenges with these people that have been trained the way of identifying, because we have constituents all over South Africa. If at least you can involve constituency offices when it comes to identify people. You know, in our constituencies, we have database of graduates, of kids that cannot manage to go to school because their parents have no means. We thought these centers were made to assist them. Then if we can use the constituency office, we won't come here. Well, once we're here, we're asking you, how did you identify these people? We will know exactly that in my constituency, at least there is one person that was identified to go to the training. So I think if you can use that data of your constituency office, it will be helpful. And also one thing that I wanted to check, for these people that are paid the levies, and how much are the people paying for the levies? And also, how do they benefit when they pay these levies? In terms of
perhaps before you answer, I think we admire the fact that you have done a lot, but we believe that a lot still needs to be done. And secondly, I think with some of these, as a way of targeting some of these sectors like the disabled, women, youth, and rural and urban. Because even in urban areas, a lot of this information is not there. And then what confuses the situation as well is this thing of concurrency of powers. The province has its own Smolanyana things and national and so forth. And then you find that the communication is not so clear. And I wanted to propose that perhaps if you could develop media programs for all language groups, Zulu, Sotho, Xhosa, Bavenda, Sangane, radio programs, not TV, radio programs, and then you feature there and interact with people and around tourism. Because I have heard about agriculture, but tourism, it does not feature in those stations. And I think it is a very, very effective medium, particularly now that we are going to have sports. Youth is going to be listening to radio a lot, those that do not have TVs, particularly now. That is going to happen more in rural areas. So let us look at that medium. I think for the poor and for the rural and for the disadvantaged, it should be a very, very effective medium. And then if you liaise with them and find programs, how they target programs, I think we can also improve. But you can answer. If you have programs, let them go on, but I think radio is a very, very important medium in as far as the disadvantage are concerned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
No, I will not have any time anymore. Let them respond, and then perhaps we can have it in writing.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Firstly, let me appreciate once more what has been raised by honorable members. Right? And if I may deal from bottom up and say, we take note and appreciate the fact that, look, media, particularly the community radios and the radios in those particular parts of the country will be a very, very good platform, right, to be able to disseminate information as much as we can, and we'll certainly utilize it. The next issue was relating to the levies. How do levies, these people get their levies? Companies differ from one company to the other on the basis of their size of their workforce and their, now as a result, the payroll will differ from a minimum being 500,000 But any company that is having a payroll of less than half a million is not obliged to pay. In fact, the receiver of revenue, even if they pay, it returns that money back to that particular company. So we then have companies that have very huge payrolls. So in our sector, it's only about 3% that actually makes us to survive, and they happen to be both the hotel industry and the casinos. Casinos on the basis that, look, they are having full-time employees, so payroll is very high. So what we then pay back is 50% of what they have paid, as it's mandatory, right? And 20% which is discretionary. So almost 70 cents of one rent goes back to them once they have shown us that they have trained. The next question is the youth or the young people to be part of the programs, and the member saying that he doesn't see that happening, and that's Ms. Jobe in this regard. We appreciate to be redirected to the constituencies as a way of saying you can tap in terms of our database there. And we're saying now that we have learnership, right, that is going to roll out, we have allocated which companies need to have learners, right, we will certainly redirect them that, look, they must recruit from the constituencies, and we will have to get a database of those constituencies. Right, what we used to do in the past, we used to redirect them to the Department of Labor Centers and say, go to the Department of Labor Centers because there is work seekers there and there is learners that have actually indicated that they are willing to. So go and get them there. So this will also play a pivotal role in terms of ensuring that, look, they come to the party on that part. And I hope I have not left anything.
Okay, perhaps let me thank you very much for your comprehensive. Is there any question that you want to respond to?
Thank you. Yes, I think there's a very important question that talks about service excellence. Looks like the question says we're starting late and we're not reporting how many out of 250,000 that has been trained. I think, Chairperson, based on the international experience, especially on countries that have actually hosted huge events like this one that we're going to host as a country, those countries, they've actually started to train, so to say, their frontline staff like a month before the event. The reason for that is that really it's not a training as such, more than it's a motivational seminar where you want to create excitement, where you want to your frontline staff to know that they are of value, where you want to actually to begin to actually reinforce the idea that they are an important part of the tourism value chain. So we are only starting with this training on the 28th of April. We'll continue with that training up until the 6th of June. I think I just needed to clarify that. Thanks, Jefferson.
Okay. So they are waiting for the month just before the event. Okay. No, but thank you very much for your presentation and for your time. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Makregeni, Mr. Sotetsi, Ms. Seti, Ms. Ngozi, and Mr. Mwanda. Okay, we appreciate your presentation. But as we go forward, we'll look at what is there. Thanks. Then to the next item of the agenda, that is the program, committee program for the second term, which is for adoption. You have that it was circulated. I do not know whether every member received the program. The proposed program.
Chair, thank you. Just maybe the secretary just to read the what the House Chairperson does right here, I'm not really don't understand. Maybe the photo start is not clear. Before it can get in.
Okay. Thanks, sir. What we wanted to just the committee to take note is that we are not sure exactly how the office of the chair was advised on this program, because the response that came back from his office is that the 11th and the 18th of May and the 1st of June. Now he says those dates have not been approved. Now his comment went on to say, it is my considered view that the program is approved except for 11th and 18th of May, as they are outside the slot of your committee, which it is not the case, because this committee meets on Tuesdays, and this committee meets from 10 o'clock up to 12:30. So 11th and 18th of May, they fall on a Tuesday. So still, that office has to explain that how those two days have not been approved. Yes, the 1st of May, they could have an issue, but the issue, what we wanted to do with the 1st of June was to submit a political request for 12:30 up to in the afternoon. So that was the only date that we were expecting them. They can give us an extension date. Otherwise, this program, Chairperson, you will remember in our last meetings, there were also other minor changes that were submitted by the committee, that were proposed by the committee. So this program is going to also take into account those and be resubmitted back to the Office of the House Chairperson.
Are you saying that they rejected our meeting on the 11th and on the 18th?
Yes, sir, because on the basis that he says the note, if you read his note at the back, is that your 11th and your 18th, they fall outside, 18th of May, they fall outside your committee slot, which is not the case. It is not the case, Chairperson. Because 11th is on Tuesday, the 18th is on Tuesday.
Okay, I'll go to the programming people first before I go where we go to the chairperson. But otherwise, is that should we do we adopt this program? Kumbo.
Chair, we discussed at the last meeting the need to bring SASA here, which I understood we had agreed we would do. And unless I'm missing it, they don't appear to be on the program. Is that deliberate, or could we not get them? What's actually happened?
That is exactly one of the issues that I've mentioned, Mr. Kumbok, that the committee made in its last meeting, made certain recommendations that they suggested that they must be on the program. So at that time, those things were not on the program. So that's why I'm saying those issues will be on the program, and this program will be resubmitted to the Office of the House Chairperson, so that in the next committee meeting next Tuesday, it can come back to this committee again, taking into account all those issues that were raised.
I'm a little bit confused, because you're asking us to approve a program which, in fact, is not supposed to be the final program. I don't get that. We took a decision at the last committee meeting that we would invite SATSA. Am I to understand that there is another individual who is not part of this committee, being the last signature on the final page, Honorable Bapela, that determines this? If not, why have we not invited SATSA yet? Because we now got 58 days.
And Mr. Kromok, what we do when we prepare the programs of committees, we prepare the program, then the program is brought to the committee makes its deliberations, then once it is satisfied, then the program will be signed by the chair, then after the chairperson has signed the program, then it will go to the office of the House Chairperson. So what the office of the House Chairperson supposed to do, they just look at the parameters, whether our requests don't fall outside the parliamentary program and so on. Then if the program falls within the parliamentary time slots and within the committee slots, then those programs, they are generally approved. So that's the question even also we're asking ourselves, what was the difficulty on the 11th of May and the 18th of May? So that's why I'm saying this issue, Chairperson is going to take up again with that office so that we can get a thorough explanation, because we even ourselves were not sure why those dates were not approved.
Hello, Machine.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Just on that same issue, does this now mean that we have to get the date approved before we can actually invite the person to come and present? Has SASA even been approached to present on the 11th of May?
No, not yet, ma'am, because of this which came from that office. Because what we want to understand from them, what are the bases? Is it correct for this to say these dates, they fall outside our slot? Because as far as we understand, as this committee, as the chair have said, these dates, the 18th and 11th, those are our choose dates and those are our meeting slots.
There's some other meaning that we're not putting to this word slot. we've always met on Tuesday, so is this not perhaps that he means, is this perhaps outside our mandate or our oversight role or something like that? Obviously, this is something, you know, I'm sort of wondering if he thinks that we have got nothing to do with, culture and heritage, or whether he thinks that we don't oversee transport and police and that's the oversight of some other committee. So I'm just sort of wondering, you know, if they've chosen the wrong word in using the word slot and have not talked about mandate or something. Because it seems odd that we should have to approve a program before a date has been approved. It seems very odd.
Yes, and in fact, I do not know. I mean, in other organizations, it would have been very, very unacceptable for a person to respond to a letter like this in this manner. I don't think it's acceptable. The office was supposed to write a letter to us and they show respect, in short. If you respond like this, it's not only a response, but it is there are better ways of communication. Any office, if you respond to any office in this way, it looks like arrogant. I know the chairperson of chairperson is not an arrogant person, but I think it is ill-advised to respond in this manner. But that one we are going to pursue. I think it's better to look at the concrete issues. That the slots and do not belong to us, and then we'll check at that.
Sorry, Chair, just another point on this. If then the members of this tourism committee are at a loose end on either of those days because the House Chairperson doesn't agree with whatever the slot thing is, can we not then invite SATSA to come and present to us on one of those days on their own as a tourism organisation, and you know, then Because then they can't argue that it's not in our mandate. And if there's a problem about a room or something, perhaps we can, you know, meet in our in a DA's caucus room or something like that.
Chairperson, can we, this committee, agree on adopting the program and give the chairperson some sort of a mandate to engage chair of chair on this matter? Because we are convinced that 11th and 18th are the days that we used to sit as this committee, and we don't have anybody, and I'm not sure even we are not, these people are going to be invited. We are not supposed to invite them. We have the right to invite them, and we have the reason why we invite them to this particular meeting. And my plea is, if you agree with the program, so that we give a chairperson a chance to address the chair of chair on this matter. That will be my proposal.
Is it agreed? Okay. So we are going to look at this and then engage and then come back to you with our position next week. And without much ado, I don't know whether there is anything in exigent, but otherwise, let us hear to Honorable Komba.
Just for the minutes, Chair, if you will please indulge me, I'd ask Mr. Baltina to note that I'm approving this program subject to the fact that SASA is on it in reasonable time before the World Cup. I can't unilaterally approve a program when the major stakeholder who has the most of this committee is not on it yet. So in principle, I agree with you that I want to note for the minutes that I'm only agreeing to it if SASA are given a slot well before the World Cup so we can actually interact with them and play our role properly. So can that please be minuted?
That is South African Tourism.
Okay.
South African Tourism Services Association. Okay. Didn't we have it in the program? Didn't we have it in the program?
That was the recommendations that was made by the committee. Yes. So that's why I'm saying what we are going to do, those issues that were recommended by the additional issues that were recommended by the committee will also be put in on this program, and this program will be resubmitted to the House, the Office of the House Chairperson. Yes.
Okay, now we first have to understand what the office of the chairperson or chairpersons means by whatever is written here. And then if it means that it is not within this committee's mandate to engage the police, he should say so. If it means slot means that it is not our allocated time to have meetings at that time, then he'll say, well, he'll explain what he means. So at this stage, we don't understand what this comment means. With those few words, let us then close this meeting. Thank you very much, Honorable Members, for your attendance and support.
Oh, sure, no problem. I'll remember to bring it with next time as well.
And I always have a pen for free to be in a kind of overpay by my bed.